Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to another Friday night edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be a very interesting dialogue about a hot topic. We've got so many of the news this week that we're just going to try to keep up. But we're going to give you an update tonight on the Eric Garner situation. There was a ruling from the medical examiner's office on Mr. Garner's staff, and we're going to talk about that tonight. We're also going to look at the Ebola virus, or some are calling it the Ebola disease, and the fact that we have two cases coming to the United States on tomorrow. So a lot of fear in a lot of people, and they're going to be taking those two people to Atlanta to the Emory Hospital there for treatment. We're also going to talk about something called the FAR Challenge, which is this craze or trend among our teenagers where they're setting themselves on fire as a challenge. Crazy thing, but they're doing it. Also, we're going to talk about the 105 smart meters that the SAS Power Company in Canada are removing from people's homes and businesses because they found that they are not safe. So that's something we're going to look at. And last but not least, we're just going to try to get to one more subject, but I'm not going to bring it up now, but hopefully we'll be able to go there before the end of the evening. But I see my co-hosts are on board. Good evening, Mr. A.J. Houston and Mr. Christopher Bunn. How are you all this evening?
Hey, good evening, good evening. I'm calling from a remote location in Dallas at my mother's birthday.
Oh, goodness. Well, tell your mother happy birthday.
Yes, absolutely. Happy birthday, mother of AJ. And hello, AJ and Kira.
Hey. Listen, you know what? I started off the song with the music about police brutality. And, you know, even though I want to get to all of these topics tonight, we've got to start with the Eric Garner case, even though that would probably be the ending for a lot of shows. But we covered that last week, and there's been some new developments in that case. Christopher, you were not with us last week when we covered Eric Garner. Is there anything you want to add to anything we said last week?
I did. I went back and listened to the show. The only thing I want to add is there's going to have to be two things: more police and civil authority training in how to handle individuals without excessive, and particularly in these that lead to bodily harm or fatal injury. And then the second thing is what needs to be utilized in certain cases without them having to go to the most extreme scenario when it doesn't dictate that.
And, you know, we covered it, I think, from A to Z last week in many ways. But, you know, after doing the show last week, I thought about something's wrong here. We keep doing the same thing, and, you know, of course, which we're getting the same result. And a lot of people say that's the definition of insanity. But every time this happens, you know, we're left in the same spot that we were the last time it happened. And we don't seem to be coming up with any new answers to how to fix it. And I thought about that a lot this weekend, and I'm going to give you all some things that I came up with this week because I was just dumbfounded at how many more Eric Garners there will be. And it just amazed me because I have brothers, I have nephews, I have uncles, you know, and I just thought, you know, and it could happen to a woman as well, that this shouldn't happen again. And we need to you know, come together to think tanks or whatever to figure out, you know, what needs to happen because, in my opinion, and I think I said it this last week, that we're getting to a point where the people are tired. And whenever you back people into a corner and they feel that there is no option, then that is when situations occur where things turn deadly. And so, you know, it could turn deadly for the police officers. It could turn deadly for the people. But I can see the tensions are boiling over with the people, you know, where the people are just distrustful of police on a level that I've never seen before. And I think that's where I think I'm concerned that we're gonna get to a point where it's not going to be safe for police to encounter us or us to encounter police. Does that make sense? Where there's so much tension in the air that it could turn where the people feel like, let me back up on that, where the people feel that
if this is all automatically going to turn bad for me, then I'll be the aggressor, so at least I know that I can kind of somewhat control the outcome. We don't want to see that happen. At least I don't want to see that happen. AJ, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do on a lot of different levels, because, you know, it's getting to the point to where just like the scene when they showed the video on the news this evening, there was just people standing in close proximity, and there were other policemen standing around, and they were just watching. And I don't think people are going to stand around and watch too much longer as long as it continues to happen that way.
Exactly. And I think that's where I'm at. It's like, you know, I saw a video online where an old lady, and I'm not sure what her situation was, she looked like she was coming out of maybe a Walmart, if you will, and she had a knife in her hand. And I'm not sure if she was just coming out of the Walmart because, you know, with a knife in her hand because she felt like maybe she'd be robbed. I'm not sure what the scenario was. But a female officer came upon her and began to give her commands to put the knife down. And for whatever reason, the old lady did not put the knife down, but the officer took the lady and slammed her to the ground. Well, you know, do I think it's right for an elderly person to walk around, you know, with a knife out? No. But at the same time, did I see, as somebody who's totally untrained, a way that knife could have been taken from her in a different manner? Absolutely. And the people began to surround the officer, and they began to yell at her, "You didn't have to do it like that. You know, she's elderly. You didn't have to do it like that." And by the time her backup came, she was completely surrounded by people. And I think that's where we're headed with this. I think that if situations like Eric Garner, and we're going to talk about Irvin Mizell, if situations like that begin to continue, I think that's when the people are going to start doing things like what they did with that particular situation with the old lady. And that's my concern, you know, that we don't need to sit down and wait for something else to happen. We need to do something to offset another Eric Garner or another Irving Mizell. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that, Carrie. And the other thing I was going to add to that is that I think sometimes what we as the people, the citizens, don't realize is that the laws that are on the books for criminals is supposed to be the same for the authorities enforcing the laws in the event that they violate those very laws. So it's one thing when police officer, sheriff, state trooper they're doing their job. I'm not advocating that they shouldn't be able to do their job, but because of a lot of the recent incident, the way that they have happened, what that also says is that in the event that it is proven that a police officer used excessive force when they could have used other means, if me and you do that, we will be in jail. If they do that, they get prosecutorial immunity, even though they went beyond what was necessary. And I think unless we're going to get either laws in place or the laws that are currently in place applicable to the authorities, we're going to continue to see this, because there doesn't really seem to be a barometer keep everybody honest, the honest broker. And I believe that this continues to happen because there's nothing built into the system to actually look at, well, when a police officer does something and it is proven that they use excessive force, then what? Do they just get a slap on the wrist? Do you just put them on leave with pay for 2 weeks and then you bring them back and nothing punitive? Because if we did that, what they did as a citizen, we would be in jail. And I think that it's almost as though the people, the citizens, are held to a higher standard than the police are.
I think a change is coming, but we only see it in, I guess, in minute increments, because the first stage of anything is awareness. And I think it's becoming so aware and apparent of so many instances, you know, starting with Florida, you know, Stand Your Ground Law with Trayvon, and then all the other places that is going on, and all these different instances with the police, all the people in any authoritative means and measurements, even when the police try and stop them from videotaping. I think everything is so viral now that no matter what happens, I think they will actually be prosecuted, you know, to the full extent of the law in real soon. I'm saying real soon because it can no longer go, and they know that the people will not maintain their silence for too much longer or their complacency for too much longer.
You know, I think I kind of have to piggyback off of that because the Medical Examiner came back today and said that chokehold killed Eric Garner, and the case was ruled a homicide. Well, I remember when he first died, they were saying that his windpipe was not broken, as though, you know, somehow because it wasn't broken, that the chokehold didn't do it. That's crazy. And so I think, you know, there were so many developments this week in that case. First of all, you know, the chokehold itself was a maneuver that was banned by the New York Police Department. That was the first thing. Well, secondly, you know, this particular precinct has so many problems, I found out this week, that it's incredible. And so, you know, it seems like to me it's impossible that someone didn't know that these guys needed retraining. It says seven out of the city's 10 most sued cops are assigned to the narcotics unit in the 120th precinct. That's the same precinct that was trying to take Eric Garner under arrest, well, place him under arrest. And so it makes you wonder, you know, what is going on? I mean, why in the world would New York City be allowing themselves to be sued repeatedly by the same group of officers? That's crazy.
Well, you know, Carrie.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you're right, and there's a distinct difference between police or procedural retraining and criminal conduct. See, yeah. Sometimes you cross a line. Well, I've been in the military 26 years, be 27 in August, and I can tell you, bar none, that in terms of civilian riot control, if I'm deployed and I'm in the heat of the battle, there's still a thing called Geneva Convention. So if it's proven that I used excessive force, whether that was choking someone or firing upon someone, and it was excessive, Article 15, I mean, I can, criminal charges can be brought in. I don't have immunity.
Thanks.
And I'm a soldier. But what difference does it make because that is a police officer? And what has happened is that they have basically crystallized civil authority to such a degree that even when they do wrong, they find a way to either lessen the charge or do nothing at all. And until, like you're saying, and AJ was saying too, there's a movement that's coming. Until the people get tired and will not tolerate it anymore, and now we want to then hold the authorities accountable, then the awareness is the first step. And then after that, along in that process, changing some of the laws that make it easy for civil authorities to get away with criminal conduct. Because even after you retool and retrain, I mean, Carrie, they don't even allow you to use the chokehold or the death hold, as they call it, to asphyxiate someone in an open cage match. We're talking about the cage matches that are off the grid that you don't see on TV. They don't even allow it in there. But the police are doing it, and then when they do it, then there's no repercussion.
See, the medical examiner came back and said Eric Garner died from compression of the neck and chest while being physically restrained by police officers with the New York Police Department. And also, the autopsy revealed that Garner's asthma, obesity, and high blood pressure were contributing factors in his death. But, you know, I think that's so insignificant what the autopsy revealed because, in my opinion, you can be 350 pounds and live to a ripe old age, if nobody takes their hand, their arm and puts it around your neck and chokes you to death. So I don't know that it's fair for them to say, oh, that contributed. Well, in my opinion, if he had just been left alone, he would have still been alive today. It was the fact that the chokehold, in my opinion, is what contributed to his death, not his obesity, not his asthma, because, in my opinion, the minute that he said, I can't breathe, that was the minute that the officer should have had enough training to know, are we putting this person under too much pressure, you know, while we're trying to arrest them? Common sense should have, at some point, if this person is screaming 8 times, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, somebody should have the common sense to say, we maybe need to give him some air. You know, so when you say, you know, his health contributed to his death, I don't really believe that. I'm sorry.
And Carrie, I was going to say, yes, those are they call it combinant factors, meaning that there's some other medical or health issues that could. But the reason that they do that is that they have to then tell the truth in terms of the coroner report, but they throw all the other minutiae out there so that they confuse people medically. All those other things had nothing to do with asphyxiation. When someone chokes you, I don't care if you're 1,000 pounds. Your air supply is cut off, and then when you're telling them you cannot breathe and they either have you handcuffed or apprehended, it is irreversible that they continue to do what they're doing when the person is telling them. And they don't have to be trained medically to know that the man can't breathe or that his breathing opportunity is being reduced because they're choking him and they're closing his windpipe.
I agree 100%. I think if I'm not mistaken, and I don't have the notes on it, well maybe I do. That officer Daniel Pataglio, he had been sued before, so Pataglio had a record. And I think there needs to be a rule in place where 3 strikes, if you're a criminal, especially in the state that I'm in, 3 strikes and you're out. I think the same should apply to an officer. You get 3 strikes, you're out. I mean, and I think Pataglio was very close on that. I'm looking for my notes on that. But Pataglio had some run-ins where he was already being sued for different things that he'd done. And so, in my opinion, Pataglio basically, you know, he was a bad apple. And for whatever reason, they didn't take him off the force. And even now, he's not off the force. He's been reassigned, but he's still with the New York Police Department. And so I think something's wrong when you would allow officers like that to stay on the force and continue to be – I'm looking for my notes on it. I'm sorry, I don't find it at the time. But I think it's something wrong when you allow officers like that to continue to be on the force and be a danger to the citizens.
Well, and Carrie, and a lot of that danger and the present danger, because they have multiple, not just complaints, but pretty much proven criminal acts. And the other problem with that is that when police officers do this initially, even before any charges, state's attorney general, whoever's going to get involved, normally internal review or some type of police independent review board, which, by the way, our police officers of that same police department are the ones that investigate. If me and you commit a crime, our neighbors are not the ones that investigate us or bring charges against us. It's usually the civil authorities. So, but in the case of police officers or civil authorities, they always investigate their own selves. But we are not afforded that opportunity. So I think until there's a change in terms of who's able to look into things and the law, that it's a carte blanche, and there's no behavior modification change that's going to happen because they know that nothing's going to be done.
You got a point. And, you know, the thing is, I think we talked last week about the fact that, you know, the way the police handle situations like this is, it's almost like we know routinely they're going to take us through this process where they're going to stall, you know, and then they're going to hope that the people forget about it, and then about the time that people start talking about it, then they'll give us a ruling that the officer is found, you know, not guilty of whatever the wrongdoing is, and then everything goes back to normal. He puts his badge and gun back on, and he goes back to the streets to do it again. And I think the problem with that is we haven't done enough as a unit, you know, in unison, because we only react when it's us, instead of everybody realizing that it's time for us all to get together now and say enough is enough. There won't be any more cases of police brutality in which the officer walks. There won't be any more cases of someone doing absolutely nothing and coming up dead in police custody. I mean, where you got video footage and they still allow the officer to get off. I mean, speaking of the video, do you all know that the police report that was turned in concerning Eric Garner's death had no mention of a chokehold? No mention?
I wasn't aware of that.
I mean, how can you turn in a police report and not mention the chokehold?
Well, it's just like the coroner for the police that initially said that they didn't think the chokehold was the reason that he died. So a lot of times you make the report beneficial to the person who the accused, as far as when it comes to police, they make it beneficial for the accused, because the thing was, as long as they say it wasn't the chokehold and it wasn't his throat wasn't the reason, so they don't have to put the chokehold in there, because the police report initially said that was the reason for his death.
See, but you know what? That's just automatic lying. I'm sorry, that's just automatic lying. I mean, if you basically are telling the story of what happened and we are to believe you, then you have to tell the truth. Now, the crazy part is, knowing that there was video footage of it, why would you tell that lie? I mean, that's the amazing part. I think that they were only saying that he was resisting arrest, and they had to do maneuvers to you know, deal with that, but they did not mention that Pataglio used the chokehold at all. And then the sergeant officer, the sergeant that arrived on the scene, he was an undercover, so I don't know which one he was in the video, but, you know, he said he arrived at the point that he was on the ground. Well, even at the point that he was on the ground for several, I believe, minutes, Pataglio still had his arms around his throat, you know, so even the commanding officer or the officer in charge at the scene made no mention of Eric Garner's, you know, being put in a chokehold. And what made matters worse is they went on to add in the police report that he didn't seem to be in distress, and no one, you know, basically felt like he was in a dire situation. Several officers said that he never even complained, and one officer kind of said, well, I think he said something about he couldn't breathe. Something about. The man yelled,
well,
he couldn't breathe 8 times.
Yes, he did. And the reason that they did that is by doctrine, brainwashing, and philosophy. And what I mean by that is that civil authorities, and I'm using that broadly, civil authorities know and they understand that with prosecutorial immunity, that means, it simply means that lying, distorting, keeping evidence, information, specific information as to the a given incident, that I can modify it, I can leave it out, I can twist it or put a spin on it and then put it or keep it out of a report. Then, after the fact that I'm questioned, I can then just simply say, I didn't think it was germane, or I don't think that it happened that way, or they'll say the classic, I don't recall. And that's what I'm getting back to, people not tolerating it anymore, like you're saying. Laws that will make it applicable to civil authorities
will save, and not just make it applicable, but make it enforceable. Because the courts, 9 times out of 10, if not 99.9% of the time, even when a police officer is wrong, and it is proven, and it is a glaring red light, the way that the courts operate, they will still be on the side of that officer. You got to have awareness. B, you have to look at specific laws that could make it more applicable to the police and so forth. And then I think from there, we'll be able to move and have a little bit more transparency. But until we do that, police officers, they're not backing down off that. Neither are their authorities.
Can you, and this is the funny part, you know, life has a way of coming full circle.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to piggyback on that. I was going to say, see, the problem has been historically in America, we are not in control of any of the mediums of medias. So the first story out usually lasts longer than the truth. So how do they tell it? All the news medias pick up on it, first one with the story, first to carry this. You heard it first on News 8, on News 4, or whatever it is. So you've heard it so many times that when it comes on, you're not even listening to the recant of what they said because you think you've heard the story before, and that's a mental thing. We've been taught to listen that way.
Well, you almost made me want to go to 9/11, but I'm going to leave that alone. But, okay, you're exactly right. I will agree with that. But, you know, go ahead. Was that Christopher?
No, I was just agreeing with you. It was a chuckle, but you were right on hitting the nail on the head.
I think life has a way, as I was saying a second ago, of coming full circle. There was a young man who was killed in New York City's custody in 2013. However, I didn't hear about this story until today because the similarities between that case and Garner's case are absolutely mind-blowing. His name was Irving Mizell. Mizell had a restraining order against him, placed on him, because he and his girlfriend had some kind of situation. Well, anyway, they said he had a drinking problem. So one night he went to the girlfriend's house, and she called police. Well, the police arrived, and they took him away from the door. And instead of taking him down the elevators, which, had cameras, they took him down the stairwell. And what we understand is they took him first away from the door and beat him and then drug him down 7 flights of stairs. Okay? Then they took him to the 120th precinct, the same precinct that had the situation with Eric Garner. And when he was there, he was complaining, "I can't breathe." They failed again to get a man medical attention, and the man died. So his family this week filed a lawsuit, a $10 million lawsuit against the city of New York. So did y'all see a pattern there? He said he couldn't breathe, and they failed to get him medical attention. The exact same precinct.
And I think, again, it's becoming rhetorical because the civil authorities and sometimes even the community, there are people who don't like it and they want change to happen and they don't want these types of stories and unfortunate deaths and injuries coming out. But, again, the civil authorities that have been doing this, and AJ alluded to that, in terms of how some of these things have not hit the media and we don't have the control so that we can actually be advocates, but it, more importantly, get exposure to what the real truth is. And honestly, there are some simple-minded people that in their wildest imagination, they don't believe that police would actually want fully or willfully harm someone. And that's a problem within itself and another story another day. But again, criminal conduct, irregardless of who commits it, should be held to the same standard. And in fact, a police officer, even though they may be in the heat of battle, we're talking about cases, and a lot of these cases where the individual is apprehended by two or more police officers. They're no longer a threat. You have taser. You have mace. You have the rubber bullets. You have a lot of things. But for some reason, they're setting aside all of those other possibilities and utilizing fatal, lethal force.
And it doesn't make sense.
I agree. And you know what's ironic about this particular case with Mr. Mizell? Irving Mizell's death was ruled accidental by the medical examiner after he died in NYPD custody due to a heart attack. Do you all remember when Eric Gardner first died, what did we hear? He died from a heart attack. Remember that?
Yeah.
But you remember the guy we had on the week before when he was talking about, it was the policeman last week. No, it was the week before.
Yeah.
And I was telling him, I say, well, would you call being shot lead poisoning? See, they have a way of wording it to where we pay no attention to the wording and we just think it's what they say because we've always looked up at authority figures as though they are the authority. Like what they say is law. And they've circumvented the law ever since we were here 400 years ago. So we've been accustomed and drawn and learned this process over a lot of time. So it's nothing that we can do unless we band together. That's why I was saying awareness is the first step. And as long as everybody's become aware that this is a possibility, when the police pull up, there's going to be so many people around a police car just to see why they're there. So they're not going to be able to tell people to put their phones down, their cameras down, or whatever. And I think there's going to be so many it's not just going to be New York. It's going to be Dallas and Fort Worth and Chicago and Mississippi. It's going to be all these places. And I think once they see it's rampant, I think the White House and some other places are going to have to do something because I don't think anybody does anything until the media, until us as the community, rise up and say something needs to be changed as a full demand.
I completely agree. They said that Mizell was taken into custody at 6:30 p.m. Basically Mizell's complaints of having difficulty breathing basically were ignored until he collapsed at 8:57 p.m. Basically, he was pronounced dead once he arrived at the hospital. So for 2 hours, they failed to get him basically any medical attention whatsoever. The autopsy, now remember, they ruled that he died from a heart attack. However, the autopsy showed multiple blood impact injuries to the man's torso, extremities, multiple cuts, and a bruised lung. However, he died from a heart attack. And, you know, I think people are tired. And the medical examiner ruled that the death was accidental due to a heart attack and acute intoxication from the combined effects of alcohol and Valium.
But Carrie, one thing we know in this American process is that as long as there's one story, that one story is being investigated, just like in the Trayvon case. You only had one story. The rest was hearsay.
Well,
it behooves the police department not to give them medical attention because then the full story will come out. There'll be other parts of the investigation that need to be checked out.
What you just said is scary. So you're saying if they rather a man die than give him some medical attention?
When they're wrong, they try and do everything to make their wrong right. And you can't make a wrong right, but the only way you can do it is to have one story and not two.
And keep in mind, AJ, he's hitting right there. And that is because after they've crossed that line or that threshold and they're not going to go back, AJ is right. I mean, they'll sit there and let somebody die. And you got to keep something in mind. It's also what they utilize to muddy the water when the water's not muddy. Trayvon Martin, what they did is that they talked about his recreational weed use. But the night of his murder, there was no drugs in his system. But they plant that so that you will think or connect the dots to think, well, he was smoking and probably high at that time. Oh, he wasn't doing nothing but trying to. So those are the things that AJ is talking about when they give you that first story, that first information. It's usually what they run with. So when people have to investigate and they actually uncover the truth, then they call you a conspiracy theorist. When you really, it's just the truth.
But Christopher, also, if you remember, he had been arrested over 30 times before. So if you're arrested that many times and you're not a second offender or a first offender, that's harassment.
Mm. But you know what? The thing is this, too. Remember last week we mentioned those arrests from 2013 and this particular situation in which causes death, that particular incident. They dropped all the charges. So it makes you wonder if he was as guilty as they were making him out to be with these 30 arrests. Why is prosecutors running now to drop charges the day of his funeral? It just makes you wonder. It just makes you wonder. I mean, I think we got to get some medical examiners who are not afraid to tell the truth, and we got to get some honest police officers who basically are there to do a job, which is protect and serve. And I think those that aren't there to protect and serve and respect the citizens like they want in return the citizens to respect them, I think we need a new overhaul of our police departments. I think when the citizens are afraid to encounter a police, we are going in the wrong direction. I think when the community is totally distrustful of the police, we are going in the wrong direction.
And Carrie, and I totally agree with you. Quote unquote, good police officers have factual knowledge that there are other police officers or civil authorities that are committing committing crimes. They also have to have some latitude and some fortitude to step up and do something about that, because if the relationships with police and communities, particularly the black community, is to come back together and foster itself, then people have to break that blue mold that the police, that they do have, in terms of even when they see something egregious, they sit back or say, I'm part of the blue shield and we don't tell one another, we don't do this and that. That has to come into play. But again, that thing dealing with criminal conduct, when proven, don't care if you're the mayor, don't care if you're this, but unfortunately, the way that the layers are in there, it's very hard to do that, because most courts don't want to have to criminally charge police officers unless, like AJ was saying, it's in the face so much and so many people are rallying to bring it to light that they have to do something.
I think the whole buddy system, am I my brother's keeper should apply when you're one cop out on the street with your partner. I think that should apply. But I think when you're riding with a dirty cop, I think, you know what, you need to be reassigned. I would say, I don't want to ride with this particular person anymore. And I would tell that person to their face, listen, I'll go as far out there to protect you as I can without messing up mine. And I'm not going to lose my livelihood, and I'm not going to do anything unethical because you want to be stupid. Now, if you want to continue that kind of behavior, you're going to have to get you a new partner, because I'm not doing it anymore. I mean, and I think that needs to happen across the board. I mean, if police officers don't care about the community, why are they there? There's so many occupations. There's so many professions. There's so many careers. Get another one. I mean, if you go to work and you don't mind killing a person for absolutely nothing, you need a new job. You burn out. Some of them are on fumes, been on fumes way too long. Some of y'all need to retire or go do something else. Because
you
can get up, put your uniform on, and go to work and kill a man and come home and have a burger and act like you haven't done a damn thing, something's wrong.
And Carrie, in parallel to what you're saying, a week ago, I was on my way home. And there was a commotion in the street, and there was a young man running up. And I say this because I want to compare basically a citizen arrest versus a civil authority arrest. In Chicago, 75th and Cottage, individual was attempting, well, he did. Two individuals had snatched a purse of a senior citizen, knocked her down, and was running away. One of the assailants got away, and the other one was being chased by two gentlemen who saw the incident. I pulled my car over and jumped out of the car and ran, and we got him. We got him down on the ground, and we held him. He was trying to scuffle, 17, 18-year-old, and we were just trying to tell him, hey, brother, be cool. Wait till the police get here. Now, we didn't choke him. We didn't, and that's just three, basically, non-civil authorities. The police came, thanked us for getting involved. We gave them our information as witnesses and so forth. They took the individual off to process him. Now, I don't understand, and that's just that particular situation, and you can't take everyone the same in terms of what a person is on or what their motive operandi is. But I'm saying in general, that it's important to realize that there are ways to handle things. And these last cases as of late, to me, they're not just police officers doing their job. They're being excessive, and I think they're being excessive because they've done it before in the past, and they're not trying to change their behavior.
I agree. You know, I spoke earlier about some things that I came up with because this, you know, the Eric Garner case, you know, every now and then there's one that just 16-year pro, this one does for me. And I sat down, and I was talking about in 30 minutes. I looked at, you know, how can this thing be turned around? How can we stop more bloodshed? How can we stop more people, you know, from being killed for nothing? I mean, for nothing. And these are some of the things. And basically I titled it, basically Stop Police Brutality A to Z. And I think, first of all, we got to start putting in politicians who are willing to put, you know, laws on the books that will protect the people from police brutality. We got to start there. We got to start going to city council meetings, and we got to start telling them when we've encountered bad police officers and situations that we know are not right. Well, we got to put them on Front Street. We got to do that. I've had a situation here. I've said it many times. I've encountered harassment from the Fort Worth Police Department for over 3.5 years now, just because of this show, just for doing shows just like the one I'm doing tonight. And I know firsthand what police harassment can be like. I've never faced police brutality. But some of the things I'm telling you all tonight are things that I've done myself. Like this next one, I've actually written my mayor. Mayor Betsy Price, I've written her. Every single one of my city council members, I've written them. We've had two city managers since this situation occurred. I've written both of them. Because you know what? When it comes down to the time that I sue them, and I will for what they've done to me, you know what? I want it on record that I've contacted my mayor. I've contacted my city council. I've contacted my city manager. They all know of the problem. So it won't be, I didn't know that they were doing that to you. Why didn't you tell somebody? I did. And I'm suggesting that anybody else encountering the same problem, definitely put your mayor, put your city council, put your city manager, because they hired the police chief. And the police chief is ultimately responsible for handling his officers. However, my situation begins with the police chief. But anyway, that's another story. But that's one of the things I personally have done. I think that basically we should demand that the police chief get out into the community. I think they got to start getting out into the community and listening to the complaints of the people. I think that basically we should demand that the police chief fire bad officers. I think he can't hide behind, well, the police association is going to be mad at me if I do it this way. I think we should demand that a new police chief, I mean, that the police chief fire bad officers. I think that we should videotape police encounters. I think when they come up on us for a traffic stop, if we're already out of the car, please get your cell phone. I think if you're in a situation in which you're already in the car and they encounter you, I don't know if it would be smart to reach for something if you don't already have it in your hand. You know, I think you definitely should have your hands visible, you know, so that they can't say you are reaching for their gun or reaching for a gun. I think that basically all situations that deal with abuse from police officer, deadly force, you know, of your family member who won't be there to speak for themselves anymore, I think you should file proper paperwork with Internal Affairs. It may appear to be going nowhere, but at least you need to paper trail that police officer and let it be known that he's not doing his job. I think you should document everything, and I mean everything, with date, with time, with witnesses, Make sure you get the officer's name. Make sure you get the officer's badge number. Make sure you get the names of every officer that's on the scene. If situations look like they're getting out of control with an officer, ask him to have his superior come to the scene. They may or may not do it, but at least you need to make sure that you requested it. And I think when situations occur and you've been harassed or being harassed like Eric Garner, I think that you need to document it, and I think you need to keep multiple copies, not just at your house just in case they decide to break in and take it, because it happens, y'all. Keep it at a different location, a friend, a family member, an attorney. I think you should do rallies. I think you should do petitions. I think you should file lawsuits against cases of police abuse. I think you should ask your pastors to get involved. Remember in the 60s, they used to get involved. Why are they not involved anymore? I think you need to make certain that you never resist arrest. I think that is how so many are getting away with what they're doing, is to say that you're resisting arrest. Never resist arrest. And absolutely, absolutely, this next one, y'all, support people on the front line. When you have people, the reason we don't have any Martin Luther Kings and Malcolm X's today is because when people like that look back, they don't have anybody standing with them. I think you absolutely have got to start supporting people who are supporting the cause. And then I think you need to start organizations that deal with combating police brutality. I think we need to demand that all officers wear those cameras on their badges or on their uniforms in some way. I don't know, some wear glasses, some have a little button or whatever, but I think they should have those cameras. I think that we should demand that on every police stop that dash cam video is activated. I think that should absolutely occur. I think that we should demand that all officers are retrained in diversity. I think we should demand that all officers receive training in use of force. I think that we should make sure that three strikes and you're out. If you're a bad officer and you're not doing your job, or it's been clearly documented that you don't know how to do your job without being aggressive or using excessive force, I think you need to go. I think you absolutely need to go. And I think police associations need to stop helping bad apples to get their jobs back. I think when the records show that the bad officers are on the force, I think if the best option is for that officer to be fired, I think he should be. And so I think the police association should hold officers basically to a higher standard. Getting down to the last video, I think that officers should submit police reports within 24 hours when they use force. I think that officers should definitely submit police reports on incidents in which deadly force was involved within 24 hours. And I think that our officers should receive random drug tests and psychological evaluations. We all agree with that. I know this is AJ Christopher. Y'all agree with that?
Well, I agree, but a lot of things are already laws. So I think we have so many laws on the books that we're not reinforcing. And and the other thing is, I agree, but I think so many people think right now that leaders are on the media, like the streaming media, like the Facebook, and they have all these little groups that they create that's not doing nothing but posting. I think the leaders should be visible and not streaming invisibly online. And I think the first catalyst in creating change is for people together and to get out of their seats in front of their computers and get together to invoke change instead of sitting down talking about everything all the time. I'm in agreement with everything you said. But then a lot of things are already written into law. We just don't make them enforce the laws that are already written.
Well, you know, all of those things we should make sure are happening in unison. I think that's the only way that we can stop police brutality. I mean, I'm sure there's others. Let me not say only, but I think that all of those are some ways that we can stop police brutality.
But that is true. I agree with that. But I mean, in terms of AJ's point, but the problem is what is applicable when the authorities commit a crime. See, most of what's on the book can be enforced reciprocally, but they're not. So you're right. We need to work on that aspect and transparency and clearancy to be clear and so forth. But I think a lot of what we're dealing with now is that I don't think in any way, shape, or form that Center Stage is just basically thumping police officers nationwide and saying, you know, all cops are bad. I think right. But there is a segment of police officers and certain district police stations and so forth that have a bad historical record of police brutality and criminal conduct. And what is happening is that when they happen, only when it is broadly brought out in the media or because other people are agitating getting that to the forefront, that then the civil authorities want to do something about it. And it should be that when it happens, like you said, there should be some kind of better protocol when certain things happen, severe, excessive force, that those reports are done and so forth, but also that the police know that the communities want to work with them, but they have to also see it from the perspective that a lot of these things that are happening, and they're not necessary. I mean, some of these situations, and then the other thing while it was on my mind I wanted to say about, a lot of training needs to be done in terms of dealing with situations of mental illness. A lot of these cases, police officers move forward, they continue to treat an individual that is obviously mentally ill. You may not know what it is, but you know they're not in their right mind. But you cannot treat them the same way as an individual who is not. And a lot of times the situations heighten themselves and an individual is hurt, maimed, or in a lot of cases killed because the police officers don't know this person was just psychotic, was undergoing some kind of psychosis, and there may be better ways, there are better ways to handle.
Okay. I agree 100%. I just think, you know, we're looking at a ticking time bomb. I mean, because, you know, people are so fed up with so many things going on in our world today, and I think sometimes it's only just that one straw to take people over the edge, and I just think we have to look at it in the sense that why would we allow this to boil over to basically bloodshed in the street where civilians and officers are harmed or maybe even killed when this is all totally avoidable? But one thing I've noticed, when you look at those YouTube videos of the police officers assaulting civilians, and let me be clear and to piggyback off something Christopher just said, Kerry is not by any means anti-police. I absolutely know we live in a world in which we need police, and I think there are some really good officers out there. In fact, I know some. But do I know some bad ones? Absolutely. So when what I say basically gets under somebody's crow, it's probably because you're doing something you ain't got no business doing. I think any good officer would not be offended by anything we said tonight. I think if it does offend an officer, it's probably because that officer is doing something that he doesn't, you know, supposed to, that he's not supposed to be doing. That's just my opinion. But I think when I see where we are today, I just think people are tired. I mean, it's just going to take that one straw. And I think we just keep, when you see these videos of these officers, they are so aggressive. It's though they are brainwashed, we said this last week, or if they are given the green light to be overly aggressive with the citizens, or as though when they come onto a scene, they demand that everything just shut down and only listen to what I'm saying. It doesn't even matter what was going on before I got here. I'm here now, and, you know, by God, I am the law. Well, that's not true. You're supposed to enforce the law, but you are not the law. You know, you don't make up the law. You just enforce the law. And I just think I think that machoism that I see with female cops and male cops in some of these videos that you've seen online, they're scary. It's just so these people become monsters and have turned against the people. And that's what I'm, like, most lost about. when did our police officers become monsters? I don't know. I mean, do y'all see what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the aggressiveness of them and how when they're taking people down, it's like a mob mentality where they're all together and they just, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. But
well,
I'm sure
Carrie,
y'all know. Go ahead.
What I was going to say, it's supposed to be the symbolic or the embodiment of civil liberties. In other words, you said it, and I don't think that all police officers believe that, but a lot of them do. Not protectors of the law, enforcers of the law. The mentality is that I am the law. Did you hear what I said? And that's kind of like how the police officer talked to you. Do you hear what I say? I'm a police officer. They're not saying I'm a civil authority here to uphold the law, and I want you to know that. They think they are the law, and they think they are, in essence, above the law, which is why there is so much back and forth in the black community with police officers. And if you also notice, I mean, here in Chicago, they were trying to create more of the officer beat, because what they have found is that when they have officers who actually walk the beat, there's better rapport. There's the individuals are more apt to tell police what happened or work closer with the police because they have a closer relationship with them. But unfortunately, when you have the mentality that you are law, not that you, that would be like me as an Army soldier basically trying to embody, I am USA. I'm the armed forces. No, I'm a representative of the people. But I'm held to the same standard as the people if I commit a crime. I should be.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. And so, again, Center Stage, Gary Hines, Christopher Bonds, A.J. Houston is not anti-police. We're anti-bad behavior from the police. That's what we are. That's what we are tonight. But, y'all, you know, listen, we got to move on. We got so many topics we got to get to, but I had to get Eric Garner because that one was just so heavy on my heart, and I'm just so pleased that the medical examiner did the right thing and did not succumb to pressure from his peers and maybe come up with some crazy, you know, lame reason why Eric Garner died, like it was an accident or a heart attack, and really just told the truth about what happened. Oh, listen, let's talk about that fight challenge, y'all. And by the way, if you just tuned in, you come to the stage tonight. We're talking about hot topics. We just covered the Eric Garner situation and also Irving Mizell, who were both killed in the custody of the New York Police Department. But now we're going to talk about the flight challenge. And later we're going to get to Malaysian Airlines flight MH17 and Malaysian flight 370. We're also going to talk about the 105,000 smart meters that are being removed in Canada because they say those things are dangerous. But, hey, you heard that on Center Stage years ago, right? Also, we're going to talk about the Ebola disease. We're having some cases brought to the United States on tomorrow, and some people are becoming very fearful. So those are some of the things we're going to get to tonight. But first, we want to talk about the fire challenge. What is going on? You know, Christopher, AJ, y'all got teenage kids. I mean, I don't have any kids, y'all, but I think I would kill one of them if I saw him doing this. But what are y'all thinking about this fire challenge trend with these teenage kids? AJ, Christopher, am I having problems with someone? AJ, Christopher, I'm going to close your lines and open them back up. This is a challenge that you see online. If you have not seen it, just Google fire challenge. And these young teenagers are videotaping themselves, basically putting themselves on fire by basically taking accelerants like fingernail polish remover, alcohol or hand sanitizer, covering their bare skin, and then they're taking a lighter and igniting their bodies. And so, you know, everybody's just at a loss for why would someone do that to themselves. But our young people are doing that. Eric Christopher, did I open your lines back up now?
Yes, I'm back. I'm good.
Okay.
I can hear you.
So, okay, so you have teenage kids. What would you do if you walked in the bathroom and caught one of them setting themselves on fire because of this fire challenge?
Wow, that's not. I'm kind of lost for words just because of the conduct and the rise of that behavior occurring. I mean, I don't know what I would do because there definitely is something wrong. But for a young adolescent to take that step and do something that is that dangerous. There's a lot of things that I would say are probably going on, and I would be questioning myself as a parent to see and wonder why my child would be doing something like that. But the incidence of that actually occurring is, I mean, it's very disturbing.
One child even died in New York, and several have, you know, received serious burns. And I think where I think we kind of derailed or things have gone off into the ditch is back in the day, the pressure that I had in my head going on for what my mama would do was greater than what the pressure for my peers, you know, what my peers would think of me or what my peers would do if I did certain things. So I think today we kind of lost the balance where the child is more trying to please the friend than they are the parents, because back in the day, everything you did, you had to think, what would happen if I do this because my mama or my daddy are going to kill me. But today, the children seem to be succumbing to peer pressure more than anything, which is crazy. I mean, I thought kids were more vain than that. I didn't think that they would I didn't think that you would want to set yourself on fire. I mean, what if you burn yourself? They don't think like that. They don't think of dangers anymore. They don't think, what if I set my clothes on fire, then I catch the house on fire, then the whole house. It just seems like they don't think of the consequences anymore. I think that's the word I'm using for. Why don't our young people think of consequences anymore?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. This is not something just like sniffing glue or paint or something like that. I mean, this mm-hmm. is like a full-scale, severe, where they're taking an action that can basically have a lifelong or an end-of-life result. And, you know, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around the behavior and the mentality of someone to, whether they're copycatting something, they see something, or someone challenges them and to that degree, and then they're willing to actually do that. It's just very, very troubling.
I think the more trouble, and if you'd like to sign in tonight, dial us up at 347-850-8390. I'd love to hear your thoughts because, you know, when I see, you know, the fire challenge and when I see the knockout game, again, I would think kids are more vain or should be more vain than they are. They should be more concerned about not, you know, bruising their bodies or hurting their bodies. But, you know, when you look at the fire challenge, when you look at the knockout game, these are both situations they're putting themselves in where they could turn deadly. You could be seriously harmed. I mean, when you're setting yourself on fire, you could definitely cause harm. And when you're taking on just out of, you know, randomly coming upon someone and you and your friends beating them down, you don't know that person doesn't have a knife or gun or isn't trained in martial arts. So it just kind of makes you wonder about our kids today. Are they so dumbed down that they can't even think about consequences? Because, you know, I just can't see why everything that seems to entertain them deals with danger. You know, high-risk behavior. AJ, did we lose you on the line? Kind of like AJ's on the dropping out. But I think the problem is what I see with the young people today is everything is so high risk. You know, the risk that they're taking makes you wonder if they value life at all. Have you ever thought about like that, Christopher, that they're not valuing their life?
Well, yes, I think that you're correct, because I think they actually probably devalue their life, and they do that because they don't think that in some cases, I don't think that they feel that they can die or that they can be injured, mm-hmm. because some young individuals can be so far removed from certain things that whether it's suicide or whether it's I'm just, you know, going to try this out to see what it's like, or whether they're getting high and so forth, it's a changing of the times in terms of the degree that individuals, I think, in a sense, they devalue, because sometimes they think life may not be worth living. But in a lot of cases, I think they don't realize the severity of what they're doing when they do something as severe as this. Or even with the knockout game, you know, it's a mentality that you think by speaking up and sucker punching somebody that that's some kind of fruitful game or some kind of gag or laugh or so forth, when it's you're injuring somebody. It's malicious intent.
Mhm. Mhm. You know, and you're trying medically. I saw on one of the news stories that I posted on Facebook today about the fire challenge that not only when they set themselves on fire are they risking basically burning the skin, but some kind of way when they do that, they're inhaling these fumes, which could be causing harm on the inside as well?
Well, true, because there's two things that happen when you're putting any kind of accelerant on yourself and then you burn. You can get first, second, or third degree burn, and it can burn from superficial right on the top of the skin all the way down to the tissue, to the blood vessels, to the bone. When that happens, okay, that's one thing. But then secondarily, if it is not treated the correct way, or even if it is treated, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have some kind of bacterial infection. So now you get two things. And then if that doesn't heal the correct way, it could be a type of infection that even the antibiotics may not be able to come back. And then it could either cause you to lose your life, because it can then get into your bloodstream and cause sepsis, or it could cause a lot of respiratory problems as well, like you're saying, because when you're talking about things like plastic, nail polish, even gasoline, accelerant, it's one thing when you just set yourself on fire, but when you pour accelerant or use accelerant to then also set yourself on fire, in a sense, it sets you on fire quicker, and it can become more toxic.
That's crazy. It seems like they don't have a normal gauge for, okay, danger, you know, little danger, just a little bit more dangerous, too dangerous. They don't seem to have a balance, you know, going on like we did. We'd always think, well, I'll do that, but I can't do this, you know, because we just always had a little person, I guess, on the inside saying, listen, when you get home, it is going to be really bad, so you can't do that. But I'm looking at these kids, and it looks like they're doing these things in their home, and I'm wondering, where the heck is the parent? I mean, I don't know.
When most of them get home, nobody's home.
Oh.
It's a single-parent household, and a parent is working one job or two jobs, a lot of hours, just trying to make ends meet. So peer pressure is a lot heavier than the peer pressure we went through, because now peer pressure is everybody just want to fit in. You just want to hang with them. So, like your mother used to say, if they jump off the cliff, you're going to jump off? Yes, they are.
Yeah. And you know what? That was enough for us to say, oh, no, I can't do that, because, first of all, your parents just made you feel stupid for doing stupid things. I don't think these kids feel stupid when they do stupid things anymore. I don't know the rush or the adrenaline rush that they get for being around their friends or posting something on Facebook or on Twitter and getting a lot of likes. You know, that's all that's important anymore. Social media has become a monster in many ways for our kids, just being accepted or being liked by everybody. Like AJ said, you know, if you get if you get so many shares or so many people like your video, then that means that you're successful in some way, which is crazy. It has no monetary value, but they like you. But that's what our kids are doing. But it's called the Fire College, y'all. So if you haven't heard of it, you need to Google it because all the newspapers are talking about it now. And it's all over YouTube. Again, it's called the Fire Challenge. Let's talk a little bit about the Ebola virus. You know, I'll be honest with y'all. I'm scared. And I'm not just going to be honest. I'm scared. And one of the connections is right here in our own backyard. One of the doctors that they're bringing back from Africa tomorrow, he's right here in the North Texas area. He was over there treating cases of Ebola when he himself and a colleague came down with the Ebola virus, and so they're being transported here on tomorrow to the United States, the Georgia Dockings Air Reserve Base, and then they're going to be transported 20 minutes away to basically Emory Hospital. The Emory University Hospital is where they're going. So this is my concern, y'all. I don't know. I'm just saying. I could be real with y'all. I'm trying to be transparent. First of all, they got to get here. And then they're going to be stopped at the Georgia Dobbins Air Force Base. And then they're going to be transported 20 minutes away to Emory University. Now, my concern, and maybe Christopher can answer this because he's in the medical field, how many potential people could be affected? I think I listened to someone, and I'm going to let you respond to this in a second, Christopher, and this is what they said. And I've learned, y'all, from doing this show for 4 years, I hear everything. And I'm listening to this person talk about, well, could this pose a potential threat here in the States, and could it, become an outbreak? And this is what the person said. The person, and I'm paraphrasing, said something to the effect, well, nothing of dangerous proportion. And I thought, well, doesn't that sound like some casualties? But I don't know. Christopher, tell us. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, just about anything that is a viral or a bacterial type of disease or pathogen, basically, whether it is man-made or whether it was something that basically was something that that had happened actually. I know, like with Ebola, they were talking about the first cases of that was actually in Africa, and it was because of bats and mice and feces dropping and so forth. But I said all that to say that in a laboratory and expand the point.
You're going in and out. You got to make sure we hear that. You said what?
Anything, whether it's a cancerous cell or Ebola or any kind of dysentery type of bacterial or viral vector, which is called in the lab, can be put into a petri dish, and you can expound on that. In other words, you can put it in what they call a cocktail, or you can put it in a dirty bomb. You can put it in medication. You can put it in vaccine. Because on top of that, usually when that is done, they also are secondarily, they have an antigen or an antidote to that particular disease because they already know what kills it because they will inject it into like a lab rat, and then they can also produce the RNA strands, which it is called, to produce an antidote for that. So when you talk about germ warfare, the sky's the limit. Could you put the Ebola virus in something and drop it on people? Or put it in people's food and so forth. That's common knowledge.
But Chris, they say there's no cure for Ebola virus. There's no cure for the Ebola virus.
Well, let me put it to you this way. There is no market cure for Ebola virus. There is no marketed, quote-unquote, cure for cancer. But I can tell you, in a general nutshell, almost anything that has been around for more than 10 or 15 years, if there's not a cure, there is at least something in terms of some kind of vaccine or antidote that will either slow it, if not kill it.
Okay. First of all, let me tell y'all what Wikipedia says Ebola is. Basically, they describe it as it's a human disease caused by the Ebola virus. Symptoms typically start 2 days to 3 weeks after contracting the virus with a fever, and then throat and muscle pain and headache, okay? And then there is then typically nausea and vomiting and diarrhea, along with decreased functioning of the liver and kidneys. At that point, some people begin to have problems with bleeding, okay? And basically they said the Ebola virus can be acquired when a person comes into contact with the blood or bodily fluid of an infected animal, such as a monkey or fruit bat. And, you know, when I read that, I thought back in the 80s, don't that sound like what they told us AIDS was? Remember that?
Yes.
It's very eerie when I read that. I thought, okay, y'all, this is like deja vu. Because that's exactly, you know, I remember in the 80s, that's kind of what you understood. It came from Africa, and you can get it from body fluid. There wasn't going to be no cure for it, and, you know, it was a death sentence. That's what we're hearing. And I'm thinking, okay, is this like deja vu, or is this, you know, and we later found out it was somewhat man-made, didn't we?
Well, yes, and Karen, I think it goes back to what AJ was talking about before in terms of the release of information. The authorities are very strategic in terms of how they release things, because they're releasing it in a way that they want you to believe it, to make it very believable. So when you think about it, I mean, even nuclear weapons, that's not something that is a viral disease. It's something that they basically, in a laboratory, they created molecules and so forth that they did things. But it's, if you can think about a lot of the diseases that are actually that are the most common ones that we're aware of, some of those, in terms of the laboratory disposition, I believe were created in a test tube or lab, because think about war. When you think about, like, think of Agent Orange. Agent Orange is biological warfare, and that's something that was created because of how they, you know, how they planned on using it, and they used it to kill people. And so certain agents have a respiratory, like tuberculosis. A lot of people don't know that tuberculosis is something that is that can be put into a test tube. It can be put into something to then inoculate individuals, and it can be something that can be put into a bomb to disperse to cause mass casualties and infection. And with the Ebola, part of that is, I believe, a super infection or something that they have taken, and they have perfected certain disease processes that they can utilize however they see fit.
Now, this is a catch to it, y'all. They're going to Atlanta. I'm sorry, by the way, Emory University is in Atlanta. Dobbins, you know, military base, that's in Atlanta. So, you know, we know that Atlanta is basically like Chocolate City. Well, now, we also know that the CDC is down there. So, you know, they're telling us basically that these people are going to be getting the best treatment, because the Emory unit, which is at this hospital, Emory University Hospital, basically was created in conjunction with the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and which is based down the road from this hospital. And they said basically that it is designed to optimize care for those with infectious diseases while safeguarding health care workers and visitors. And then it goes on to say Emory basically is one of only four U.S. institutions capable of such care, according to Dr. Bruce Rivner, who basically oversees the special isolation unit. Well, that's it. You know, it's one out of four. So someone says to me this evening, and I thought, you know, good answer. They said, why didn't they send them to D.C.? And my thought was, this is just me. That's where all the politicians are. You know, that's where our president is. They're not going to send them to D.C., right, y'all?
Well,
it does sound like just in case.
Well,
I said, that's not like just in case. We're going to send D.C. just in case.
You said, yeah, you're right.
Well,
I mean, but they didn't. They sent them to Atlanta. But anyway.
No, I'm saying they didn't send them because just in case they can't control it. We're not sending them there.
Exactly. Okay, exactly. Yeah. And
well,
you know what?
Carrie,
I can just see the politicians going, don't send them here. Then, you know, the congressman and send them there. Sit around there. But I'm just saying it. But anyway, say what, Christopher?
Well, you remember with the Tuskegee, that experiment with the black men and syphilis. See,
yeah.
Here's part of the problem that people have in their thinking process. The government or a specific entity that does research, they wouldn't dare do that long. If they took unknown black men and injected them with syphilis so that they can have actually human test pilots to see how that disease process was going to work with them. And the reason they did it is that they already had a cure. They didn't use them to get the cure. They just needed subjects to see how that was going to react to them because it was at a time, wartime, where they might be able to use that to their advantage. So if people will just think about that experiment that we know is a fact, it's not even disputable. We don't even have to dispute it because it's a matter of fact that was then. So there's more technology and there's more know-how now than it was then. So there's nothing that I wouldn't put past individuals that are in the guise of that in terms of the Ebola, because Ebola is a very contagious, nasty disease.
Wow.
And it is not that difficult to get it into a medium where it could infect a whole lot of people.
Wow. I mean, that's just, you know, this is what I struggle with. Are you seeing that Ebola is not airborne? So just driving by somebody who's got it, you know, or standing next to somebody with that, I'm not going to be able to contract it just by standing next to them, right?
Well, in general, it's what's called aerosolized. So it's like if it's just like someone sneezes or it's there in the air. It's Ebola tends to be a blood pathogen. Usually individuals are going to contract it similar to like AIDS. But it's if a person with Ebola has an open cut and it transfers to your body saliva, then you can't get it. But usually not just because somebody coughed on you. It's more of a blood pathogen that's more like the bodily fluids is how other people get it.
And that makes my point. The people that are affected, that are infected rather, that will be arriving tomorrow, or one of them that will be arriving tomorrow, is a doctor. He's a doctor, and he was a doctor Fort Worth, John Peter Smith Hospital in Fort Worth, which makes me wonder, how is it that a doctor would, you know, with all his knowledge in treating them, allow himself to come in contact with their body fluid? Does that make sense? So if they had just had a volunteer, I'd say, okay, they were probably careless and didn't know any better and weren't trained properly. But you're talking about a doctor, so that makes you wonder, how did the doctor come in contact with these body fluids?
No, it makes a lot of sense because you say he went over to help out with the outbreak.
Good.
And when you go to help out with the outbreak, that means you studied it in totality because it's something you don't want to get. So how do you get it?
Exactly. I'm just giving y'all things to think about. And when I saw that, I thought, well, you know, if it was a lay person, anyone under the status of maybe a nurse, I would have probably said, you know, they didn't know any better, and they just probably picked up something that they shouldn't have. But when you say that it's not airborne, you can't get it it's not an airborne disease, then it makes me wonder, is there more to this? I'm just saying, but, you know, y'all draw your own conclusions. I'm just saying tonight. That's just one of the things that just popped out of my head.
But, Carrie, there's a movie starring Cuba Gooding Jr. and who's the guy that played Rain Man?
Oh, Dustin Hoffman?
Yeah, Dustin Hoffman. It's called it's called Infectious or something like that.
Oh.
And it's a movie about 5 or 6 years old. And it's about the same thing.
See, I watched a movie called Contagion. And I remember when it first came out, I thought, I got to go see that movie. And basically, it was talking about, you know, how this virus started across the water. But one person, you know, coming in contact with another person, it got over here. And so, I don't know, y'all. I just say it's prayer time. It's prayer time. Because, you know, with Atlanta is a southern city. You know, people traveling, you know, from Atlanta to here and back all the time. You know, people catching flights and, you know, so it could just be transported. If it was, I think, as being airborne, if it could happen airborne, it could be just, you know, just like that.
Well,
but if Christopher,
well,
it's not airborne, then what are we talking about?
Well, and Karen, think about it. You're absolutely right. And think about it like this. They were saying that the Ebola and the AIDS, the earlier onsets were the late 70s, the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Dropping from a bat, a monkey, an ape within itself does not yield what they're talking about.
It doesn't?
I mean, common sense would let you know that if that was then occurring, it would have to be because something changed in that animal or that vector's environment that allowed for something to either become progressively worse than it was, or like a super infection or something. Because research-wise, some of the explanation behind that, it just simply yields that it started at this point or was first being identified and recorded, but the way that they say that the disease process happened couldn't have happened that way if you're just saying it happened because now people were becoming in contact with monkey feces.
And you know, I think that's where I'm feeling there too. As you were talking, I was thinking, okay, you know, AIDS is something people get through sexual contact. But when you're talking about the Ebola virus, okay, why is it an outbreak if it's going to be caught or you're going to be infected through bodily fluid? That doesn't make sense. You know what I'm saying? How could it be an outbreak if people are aware that there's a problem over there? How are they still coming in contact with each other's bodily fluid? You know what I'm saying?
True. Something humanistic is driving that.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate to say that. But, yeah, y'all, that's what that's looking like. Okay, y'all, we're going to move on. Y'all can draw y'all conclusions on that story. And like I said, it's prayer time. Let's talk about smart meters, which is, again, something Senator Sage talked about years ago. We even had Encore, for those who live in North Texas. Encore came on the show twice. They're a utility provider. They came on twice. They're head people. And we lit a fire under them. We'll just say that. It's two shows are in the archives. You all can go back and listen to them. But anyway, we proved to them on two separate shows that, you know, basically smart meters, we just weren't sure were a safe thing. We said that there was health concerns. You know, people, you know, were saying that they became nauseated. You know, they had headaches. You know, that smart meters overall was spying on people. They were causing house fires, you know, and all of that was denied. Well, in Canada, it appears that in a province in Canada, they're making the power company called Fast Power remove 105 smart meters, 105,000, I'm sorry, not 105, 105,000 smart meters, because they said that basically earlier this month, several houses are caught on fire. And so I think a half a dozen, I think that's what it was, a half a dozen houses caught on fire. Now, y'all, that's not an accident. I mean, that's I guess, a clear number of cases for them to say something's wrong here. Why is that the case over there, that Canada is realizing that there's a problem with the smart meter, but over here we're just moving forward, we just keep rolling them out and not taking into consideration that these smart meters are not tested. They have not been properly tested to be put on your house.
I think two reasons. Capitalism in terms of the money to be made and the dumbing down of the research that was probably more than likely already indicating that. So if Canada was already, if that's reflecting and that the U.S. is not paying attention to that, I think it's profits over safety. And it just really sounds like you can't tell me that there's not some type of study that was done that pretty much showed the flaw or flaws and the propensity for that particular system or unit to basically catch on fire, spark a fire, or whatever the case is. I guess I'm saying that it's a known fact, but they're going to push forward because there's some money that's already been laid on the table.
You know what I think is? I think it's twofold. I think the smart meters have such a capability for helping law enforcement and helping the government spy on their people that's why I think that's the driving force. I think that, you know, to have smart meters to be basically globally placed on every home and business. I mean, basically they can monitor your appliances. They basically can determine when you got home and when you left. I mean, based on your appliance usage, and then the smart meters communicate with each other. So your smart meter may be communicating with the smart meter next door or around the corner. I mean, these smart meters are just incredible. And they also, you know, don't have to come out to your house anymore and say, you know, Mr. Houston, we need to get in the backyard because you didn't pay your utility bill and we're going to cut you off. They cut you off from downtown now, you know, and so or from their main office. And so there's a lot of different things going on with these smart meters, but I'm just very impressed that in Canada they're looking at the people's safety first, and they're saying that the cost to remove 105,000 smart meters will be somewhere around $15 million. But they're saying, you know what, it's going to be worth it because we are putting the people first. And I think that is just incredible that they were the first to do this. Now, whether it will ever happen here in the States, we don't know. But I just am so impressed with that. But I will say something. When I was preparing for this show, I was in an area where there's multiple housing, you know, like in a complex, and I saw that next to one person's apartment, there were about 8 smart meters. And I wanted so badly to go knock on that person's door and say, if you only knew the danger that you had just on the other side of your wall. Because if you got 8, if you live in an apartment complex, and let's just say those smart meters on the back side of where you live, if on the other side of the wall is 8 smart meters, you got all kind of power coming in and around your house on a regular basis, and that's just scary. So just put that out there for people who live in, multifamily units, that those smart meters are not anything to play with. But, you know, we've talked about that, and like I said, we got several shows on smart meters, I think 2 shows on smart meters where OnCar did come on and talk with us about it, and we went in detail on those shows about what all is wrong with smart meters and why they're not safe to put on your houses. But we do know in this case they said that there was a half a dozen houses that caught on fire in Canada after these smart meters were placed on the house. So that's something to think about. Yeah, this is a half dozen one kind of fire. Okay, y'all want to add anything before we move on, AJ, about smart meters, Christopher, about smart meters?
Well, I did want to say something about smart meters because when they first installed them in Texas, everybody felt like they was getting the wrong billing. The billing was incorrect. So they was having people come out and check that they were the smart meters. They don't need to come and check. But then they found errors on some of the meters, but they hushed it in the news media. So nobody knows the full effect of smart meters because it's been so hush-hush. But with Canada coming out with that, it actually opens up the gate, the floodgates, for everybody to say, hey, I need a smart meter off my house. But you know, they installed them, and a lot of people, when they installed them, they didn't let the people know they was installing different meters.
Listen, funny you say that. With the smart meter, they sent you a little notice on your door, and if you got it, fine. If you didn't, they were still moving forward. And they, unless you had some type of dog or fence that prevented them from getting in your yard, they just came in like a thief in the night, took the old box off, and put the new one on, and they were done.
But Carrie, that's kind of like the water department. You know how the water department say, we left a notice? And sometimes they just throw it in your yard. If it blow away, it just blows away. So they don't really leave a notice. And like UPS. UPS say they rung the doorbell. They try to deliver a package. And most of the time, they just pass by your house because they trying to deliver, you know, make it back to the office in time so they can get off. So it's a lot of things that aren't common in the U.S. It's common because people have found ways around doing what they're supposed to do.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. I mean, you know, I just think when the smart meter did roll out, I was one of those people whose bill did go up, and it went up from like $100 a month to the very next month, $300 and some a month, and then the very next bill. And let me tell you what happened in between the $100 and $500 bill was the third month. I was so outraged that I went from 100 to 300. I started cutting things off and unplugging everything, and I found myself sitting in my house with the air at 80 degrees, and I was burning up. But I was like, listen, I got to get this bill down, only to get a bill the next month for 500. And that's when I said, wait a minute, enough. Okay, I didn't catch the first one, but I know there's a problem now. And I contacted Encore, and I was like, listen, we got a problem, Houston, and they would not listen. And I said, I will talk about you on my show every week until the whole world gets there's a problem with these smart meters. And they very sarcastically said, well, listen, if you're having a show about it, we'd love to come on and talk to you about it. I said, okay, fine. Well, what I set out to do then was find every expert I could to talk about smart meters, and that's exactly what I did. And by the time Encore came on several days later, every expert that I could find that was available to come on that show was on there, and we blew Encore out of the water. And when we did the second show, they mistakenly asked again if they could come on because they thought, okay, we're more prepared. Now we're going to send a big boss, and same result. So, like I said, I brought all the experts, but I pulled out all the stops from that particular show, and there is absolutely issues with the smart meter. But, y'all, moving on to our last topic for tonight, because we're down to our last 15 minutes of the show. Okay, what's going on with Malaysian Airlines? I'm sorry. I wouldn't, if they would give the tickets away to Malaysia on Malaysian Airlines, I wouldn't get on a plane. But when you have two planes in 131 days to either disappear or get allegedly shot down by a missile, obviously you got something wrong. And so we know on Malaysian flight MH370, it disappeared, and we have not heard where it went yet. I mean, there's been all types of speculation and conspiracy theories. But nothing concrete. What did we last hear? Mr. Dick Gregory was telling a theory that he had about what happened to Malaysian flight MH370. Christopher, AJ, do y'all remember what that was?
I think he was talking about scientists and some top innovators that were on that flight I think they were trying to play down the actual manifest of who was on that flight. And that seems to be, particularly for the Malaysian flight, that is factual. I mean, you really don't hear a lot about the line-by-line itinerary, who was on those flights. But Dick Gregory was speaking to some individuals that had created semiconductors and a lot of multi-billion-dollar patents that were on those planes that came up missing.
And didn't he allege that I'm struggling just to say it, y'all. Didn't he say that that it was being said that the plane was actually diverted to a U.S. military base that was near where the plane disappeared at, called Diego Garcia?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, that is what he said. And it's a secret base that nobody knew anything about. But see, the thing is when you talk about things that nobody knows about, U.S. is going to hush that up pretty quick.
Yeah.
So still ain't nobody going to know nothing about it.
Exactly. If y'all are looking for that, that's on YouTube. Dick Gregory was talking about what happened to Malaysian Flight 370. He said it was diverted to a U.S. military base by the name of Diego Garcia somewhere out there in the area near where the plane was last seen. So that, let's just say, that's, we're going to put a pin there. That's maybe what happened to Flight MH370. But what happened to Malaysian Airlines Flight MH17? Now, when did we start diverting planes to fly over war zones? That makes no sense. Who diverted the plane to fly over the war zone?
They did. They, you know how the proverbial they?
Okay,
they always use the little innocuous they or them or whoever, so they don't really have to put a name to it. But that means if they diverted, that means somebody knew where the plane was. So you can't let everybody know who knew where the plane was, because anybody want to talk to the person that knew where the plane was so they can find where the plane is.
Okay. If I was making, I don't know, I know of an air traffic controller. Back in the day, he was making six figures. I just can't imagine someone who's making well over six figures to sit there and just is so out of it that they are not even paying attention and they just divert a plane over a war zone. Where did they do that at? That's just totally unbelievable.
Well, you know what, Carrie? That's something I didn't know, and I'm sensing now as you say that. Apparently, they were saying that prior to 2014, that the Malaysian airline, it had one of the world's best safety records. They had only had two fatal accidents in 68 years of operation. That was the hijacking in 77, and that resulted in 100 deaths.
Okay.
There was another airline. You remember the Concorde airline?
Right.
They had one of the best safety records as well, but they were such a good competitor that they had that one airline crash and then they went under.
But if you think about it, if they had such a great safety record, after the first plane came up missing, why less than a month later another plane came up missing, as though there's a trend or somebody's trying to point fingers at a particular area, arena, or a certain direction as to something really, really wrong going on.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you this. And somebody said, Henry Kissinger said, never, never, ever let a crisis, a good crisis, go to waste. We're not going to use this as a reason to go to war with Russia early, because you know, we know that basically this war zone was the war zone in which, you know, Russian separatists were fighting or are fighting with the Ukrainian government. So, you know, a lot of people are saying that Russia is supplying weapons to these Russian separatists. or the Russian government, rather, is supplying weapons to these Russian separatists. But, you know, we're not going to use that to go to war with Russia, are we?
But that's been historic. I'm saying Iran-Contra and all these things, when they try to blame everything on Ali North, a colonel who didn't have the authority to do whatever they said he did, but he was willing to take the blame. So we have to look at it in true perspective, is that sometimes the truth comes out, but it comes out in such a way that we believe it's a lie.
True. And see, the Ukrainian government basically blamed Russia, said that, you know, Russia sent the missile. But if I was fighting with you, wouldn't it stand a reason that I'd blame you? I mean, if it got shot down over a war zone that you and I were fighting over and I knew that I was going to get in a lot of trouble, wouldn't I blame you? I mean, why would we just take Ukraine's word for that? I don't know. But I just found that very interesting.
Hmm. Well, look at what's happening between the Israel and Palestine. They said that each one of them actually said that they were the one that broke the ceasefire. Ceasefire was supposed to be 72 hours. It lasted for two. And they blamed each other.
You know, and that's the subject we have not touched. Because, you know, I am so on the fence with, as a Christian, where, you know, people will say the Bible says that anybody goes against Israel, basically Israel, is like the chosen people. And so I'm so on the fence with that. That is the only reason Center Stage has not covered that, because I am so carefully considering what is right over there. I mean, it's so many people dying, and I just don't understand the bloodshed. And so that is the only reason Center Stage has not touched that subject. It's because... From a biblical standpoint, I'm confused.
But I wrote a piece, the title of the piece was War, but War actually stands for We Are Right, because everybody will fight for what they believe is right, and I think that's vindictive of this freedom of speech we have, and freedom of speech only matters if you say the same things that I say. If you say anything different, I'm against you, so I'm going to get everybody else against you. And I think freedom of speech has changed so drastically in America that it doesn't matter what our topics are. If people agree with or don't agree with, they have a whole force of people to put up against us because we said something that they didn't like. And I think freedom of speech should be that if you ask my opinion, let me voice my opinion. You don't have to agree with it. We can agree to disagree, but I think that's a foreign policy in the United States to agree to disagree these days.
I don't know. Christopher, you got any thoughts on Israel and Palestine?
I think that a lot of individuals, because of more probably what they've heard over the last 20, 30 years dealing with that whole situation with the Gaza Strip and so forth, a lot of people are confused because they don't know what to think. I can tell you this, though. I can tell you that the Palestinian people, in a sense, are poor folks that the Israelis are not considering one way or another about sharing that land, that property, in terms of the individuals having homes, individuals having an economy, and so forth. And when you really think about it, the money and the things that are going on in that area, again, it's kind of like when we're talking about the Border Patrol. If I'm already spending a whole lot of money to basically keep you off of this land, and I'm killing, we're bombing one another and so forth, to me, the simplest inroad is to bring in everybody, even some of the bad guys, so to speak, and try to do things different than you've been doing it before. Because at this point, Palestine will never be in a war sense victorious, because Israel will always have too much sovereignty and too much support from the U.S. and other countries. So I think unless somebody does something that's going to force Israel into doing something different, nothing different is going to happen. And it's just the way of attrition in the world. And I think that
people also don't see that Palestinian individuals that are killed, Israeli individuals, soldiers, children, and so forth that are killed. Whether you're Palestinian, whether you're Israeli, whether you're American, there is no difference. And that's kind of like what Dr. West is talking about all the time. Things get so far removed, and a lot of times people just feel like, well, I'm here in the U.S., and I don't really like what's going on over there, but what can I really do? So I think there's a problem with the two governments actually trying to come up with what may be reasonable outside of just politics and what has been dictated in the past.
Wow. You know, let's hit one more subject. We got about 5 minutes. It's probably the wrong subject. We're hitting a 5 minute span, but we're going to go there. You know, this week I got several emails, and I think I sent them to you all, about the impeachment of the president, which I thought, okay, are you all serious? You know, because I really just found it, like, you know, very interesting that they would take that route. But What are you all thoughts on that? With you know, Boehner, you know, bringing the suit, trying to impeach the president. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thought is this: in his first term, every Republican I heard on Fox or any station, their whole goal was to not vote for anything that he implemented, even if it was their plan, because they wanted to make him a one-termer. So when he was reelected, the whole goal was to make him look bad in the records of history. So as far as everything they can do, they've done. Everything they can undo, they're trying to undo. And see, what we're missing is that all the rights that we have, you know, even our right to vote, isn't a matter of record. They have to re-vote on that every year. And they're trying to make it harder for us to vote than anything. So I'm thinking that the next step is them not ratifying the limit of us having the right to vote. And I think that we're not a part of this political process, so we miss so many things because we're tired of the bickering. But I think we need to join in the bickering and make our voice louder than the others so we can actually voice our own comments, our own concerns.
Christopher.
And I would also say with that a lot of what the Republicans are doing has absolutely nothing to do with what their constituents want. This is like a personal agenda that they have decided they're going to do. They're not asking the people from their district what they really want. Because I can tell you, it wasn't because it was the people who voted them in saying, oh, yeah, we want to impeach the president, is the reason that they're doing this. I think things are being made very difficult on purpose, and that in terms of this impeachment or them trying to pursue this, it has nothing to do with their constituents actually trying to let them know or authorize them or tell them that this is something that they want. I think it's just another attempt to try to push the president into a political realm that they haven't done it any other time that I've seen to any other president.
Do you all think they'll be successful?
They don't have any ground.
Right.
So the thing is, just to bring up the conversation, is political enough. Because if you notice, the Republicans forever have, you know, when one person says something, everybody starts having the same. See, I can understand everybody being in the same vein of the conversation, but not everybody having the same exact conversation. So that has to be an agreement amongst them to have the same exact conversation, same talking points, same everything else. And it's been consistent ever since President Obama has been in office. And me, I'm saying it curls my skin every time I hear somebody say Mr. Obama or whatever. Like, they don't want to give him the credit or credence of being commander-in-chief of these United States. It's like they try to take every bit of dignity away from this particular office. When everybody else, regardless of who they were, they call him President Bush, call him President Reagan, call him President, you know, Carter. Even though they didn't like him, but I think it's vindictive of them to try and make the American populace use the same verbiage as they use when they say Obama this and Obama that or Mr. You know. Mr. Obama, Mr. whatever, they never use president, as though he's not president of the United States.
Okay, y'all. That's going to have to be the final word. This has been another edition of Center Stage, where we covered hot topics. And I think we went from A to Z on them tonight. Listen, if you have a topic that you'd like us to cover here on Center Stage, drop us an email at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. Again, if you have a topic you'd like to see us do here on Center Stage, drop us a line at centerstageradio@yahoo.com. This is what we do each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. You can meet Carrie, AJ, and Christopher right here at Center Stage. Tell a friend, tell a family member to check out the show. Okay, we got to get out of here, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.